I know many of us in the church have a passion or a love for reading, and many of us have devoured a variety of books. We might have told you this story before with Vivian. She loved to read so much that we finally realized the best way to discipline her was to tell her she couldn't read for a period of time. I don't know if I like to read that much, but I have very much enjoyed reading, and I know that many of you have read a variety of books. Some of you have recommended books to me. One of my favorite writers of all times was James Michener. He won a Pulitzer Prize with his first book, Tales of the South Pacific. I don't know if any of you recognize that as a book, but you might recognize it as a Broadway musical and then also as a major motion picture on TV. So if you haven't read the book, maybe you've seen the musical or have seen the motion picture itself. Now, his books were almost always historical fiction, which is a style that people either really enjoy or don't care much for. Personally, I like historical fiction, his fall into that category. And what he would do is weave these big narratives involving generation of families. So it goes from one generation to another of a same family in various parts of the world or various states here in the country. And he would move their lives through documented historical events that took place in whatever part of the country or world it was. So he was actually a writer that would move to an area that he was writing about and live there for a period of time as he was writing. So I don't know if any of you have read the book Chesapeake, but he lived here in Maryland for several years during the 70s and wrote about a family or generations of this family in the Chesapeake Bay area from the late 1500s through the 1970s. So if it's something that you're interested in, you might want to read that book. I thought I would just show you one of my favorites. I'm not, sometimes it's hard for me to get rid of books, but nonfiction, I tend to read them and pass them on or something. I kept this one. So this one's called The Source. This is a typical Michener book. A lot of words, over 1,000 page, and not enough pictures. But it was a very interesting book. This particular one, The Source, is about the Jewish people and settling of the land of Israel. So it's an interesting read if you have a year or so to read a book. It's a pretty good one to read. Another one of my favorite writers that I used to buy the hardbacks. Most of the time I wait for paperback books before I buy one. But for this writer, every time he came out with a new book for years, I had to buy it, get it as quickly as possible for my next trip overseas or something and read it on the plane. But maybe many of you recognize the name John Grisham. And you might recognize his name from how many of his legal genre books have been turned into movies. So they've been adapted for screenplays and turned into movies. This is not an entire list of them, but here's a list of some of the feature films that you might recognize from his books. I've read all of these books. I don't know if I've seen all these movies, but The Firm, The Pelican Brief, The Client, A Time to Kill, The Chamber, The Rainmaker, Runaway Jury, and there's others that were made as well, and actually he has two that are coming up in the very near future that are two of his books that are being made into movies as well. Then he has another book, which a novel, which was made into a television movie, and the title of this one was A Painted House. And as a fan of Grissom's books, and having read this particular book, A Painted House, it was very interesting to me that Mr. Franks opened the 2015 International Ministerial Conference talking about this specific book, A Painted House. So maybe some of you have actually read that. It was his first major work outside of the legal thriller genre in which he established himself. And it's set in the late summer and early fall of 1952. And it follows the life of a young boy. He starts in the book at about 7 years old, I believe. And he's the youngest of a family of cotton farmers that are struggling to bring their crops in on time and have enough rain and all this kind of stuff so that their crops grow and they're able to harvest the crops in order to settle their debts. So it's about this young boy as he's forced to grow up through the hardships of life. And Mr. Franks mentioned this book is set in a part of Arkansas and during a time period in which he was a boy, a young man living and working in similar circumstances. So we're going to come back to that for a moment, but I'm going to share a little bit with you concerning the conference. So this is what they give us as far as the various presentations that were made. So the theme of the International Ministerial Conference this year was On This Rock. And so the very first presentation was Mr. Franks as president, and he gave one on building on the true foundation. And then there's a couple that were given by Mr. Kylo about preaching the gospel. One was titled, I Will Build My Church, and the other one was Open to Us a Door for the Word. I'm going to save those until the Bible study time, and we're going to cover some scriptures concerning preaching the gospel. But some of these others I want to cover a little bit of at this time. Mr. Doug Horchak gave a presentation titled, By This All Men Shall Know. So I think we should all recognize that, of course, from Scripture. And he covered the verses. Let's just take a look at it in John chapter 13. I know for me it was very nice, and I think for the vast majority, if not all of the ministry, we enjoyed being preached to, so to speak, and encouraged. And certainly we had several call to actions, and this was certainly one by Mr. Horchak. He asked that we make sure that we are not underselling love as far as God's love and recognizing the benefits of having God's Spirit and being able to have the love of God flowing in us and through us. And certainly he emphasized this in John chapter 13, where we read in verse 34, A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And verse 35, By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. So we recognize the fact that the Scriptures state that this is a way that people, anybody, would be able to recognize God's family, God's children, God's called out ones at this time, that we have, that we express, that we show this love for one another. So he covered this primarily in three components of this verse, verse 34, said it's a new commandment. So Christ says it's a new commandment I give to you. Well, we know that love was not new. This is not the first time that love was spoken of in the Bible. It's not the first time that love was expressed or that we're even told to love. Certainly love God and love His people, His work, His church. But here it says it's a new commandment that I give to you. So what's new about this? And of course, we recognize that it's how we love one another. Barclay's commentary on this verse says that it is a way of living that must be decided upon. In other words, we make a choice once we have access to God's Holy Spirit that we're going to utilize it. And loving others is as Christ loved you. So he says, as I have loved you. So what's new about this commandment? Well, this love that we are to have for one another, we are to follow the example that Jesus Christ set in loving His brothers and sisters. As a matter of fact, we recognize loving all of humanity, that He was, of course, willing to lay down His life so that we can be a part of His family, that we can be a part of God's family. So Jesus Christ set the perfect example of love. And how is it that Christ loved? Well, I just told you that He loved us so much. Of course, God loved us so much, He's willing to give His only begotten Son. But Jesus Christ loves us to the point that He was willing to lay down His life for us. So we're very, very grateful for that. Let's notice in John chapter 15. Just where we see that this is reiterated in John chapter 15. Verse 11 through 14, where we read, These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. So how many of us would like to have our joy full, where we're full of joy, where we recognize the joy in life? And certainly that's something that we can take advantage of. Verse 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. So we see again that it's emphasized and reiterated. And greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. And you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. So we know that from the Bible, from Scripture, from time to time we read about certain men throughout the history of God working with humanity who are friends with God. I hope that from time to time that you ask God to be his friend, literally and specifically. I do. When you look at the various things that it says about men from the Bible, so we can read that there was someone who was called a friend of God. I'm not going to tell you who it was. Hopefully you can think of it. There was someone who was called a man after God's own heart. And hopefully you can think of who that was from the Bible. There was someone, more than one person, that says they walked with God. So these are all things that from time to time, when I'm on my knees, I will pray and ask God that I walk with him, that he walks with me, that he is my friend, that I'm his friend, and that he will help me to be a human being after his own heart. But coming back to this, we see again this emphasis that this is a commandment from Jesus Christ, that we are to love one another as he has loved us. So it's a wonderful thing. We know that it sounds good. We sing about it. We think about it. Sometimes we talk about it. But this must be a part of how we live our lives. Through the power of God's Spirit, that we allow godly love to be demonstrated in our relationships with each other. And then the third aspect that he brought out about this particular section of Scripture, so as far as this new commandment that he gives to us to love one another, is that by this all men shall know. All men shall know that we are of Jesus Christ. And so we were encouraged by Mr. Horchak as the ministry for Church of God, a worldwide association, to preach the truth in love, and certainly to strive to develop that love for God, for God's way of life, for the truth, and certainly for each and every one of you. So that is something certainly that I pray for as well, is that God will help me to have a true godly love for each of you, and I certainly would appreciate your prayers that God will help you to love me too. But it is a call to the church. It's an identifying aspect of God's church, is this love that we are able to actually have and demonstrate towards one another. Let's notice in Matthew 24, the Olivet prophecy that we turn to quite often when we're preaching about end-time prophecies, where we are given a very stern warning concerning this. Matthew 24, so when it gets towards the end time, you'll remember the disciples asked Christ about the signs of the end time, and he goes through various things that are going to take place, and he comes down to verse 12, and it says, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. And so what happens is it's describing the fact that there's going to be so much going on in our society, so much hate, so much envy, so much self-seeking, all these horrible things that are going on where people have totally rejected God and God's way of life, that some people will get caught up in it and swept away in it as well. And the love that they had for God and for God's people and for each other, it says that it will actually grow cold. So there will be so much lawlessness going about that people will get caught up in it. And it says the love of many. So what's many mean? We don't know. It's more than a few. Is it more than half? We don't know exactly what many means. But it demonstrates that it could happen to any of us if we're not aware of it. So there was a call to action to make sure that we understand that we are commanded to love one another. And it says in verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. So it shows how much work it's going to take to keep this love of God. We have to keep it in mind and keep working towards it so that we can endure till the end and that our love does not wax cold. So loving one another as Christ commanded requires the very love of God to be in us and to flow through us. And that requires the power of God's Holy Spirit. So we certainly recognize that and understand that. So there was quite a call to action from Mr. Horchak as the ministerial services director to the ministry to step up and make sure that we are recognizing this wonderful calling that God has given us and the opportunity to develop loving relationships with God's people. There are a few things that I'm going to save you from, like the doctrinal committee presentation. Well, it was a slide with the regulations that say what they're supposed to do, but they're not doing anything right now because there's nothing much that's come before them. There's a couple of papers that they've been reviewing and working on, but there's not a lot of detail there that I can share with you. And then the financial report from Mr. Taylor as the officer, the treasury officer, was very positive. So I'll just make note of that the income is coming in above budget, which in any situation, whether it's your household or a corporation, a business, or a church, is the right way to do it. So the income is coming in above the outflow, and even at the lowest point, which he said is right before trumpets, and because already a lot of money has been spent to prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles, and the fall holiday offerings haven't come in as of yet, but even at that time, there's money that is set aside for that type of situation. Many of you might remember in the past, as he emphasized, that the church used to take out a loan of millions of dollars about that time every year. And then after the feast and after the offerings come in from the holy days, that's when they would pay back the loans. And of course, at this point, we don't operate that way, so we put money in the bank account in case the need is there, and there is money in the bank account, so that's a good thing. We also had international reports, and we were able to hear from various men around the world. Neville Smith from South Africa gave a report. Kabani Banda from Zambia gave a report. Mr. Jeff Cottle from New Zealand, and he's got the hard job of serving the brethren in Fiji and Tonga and Singapore and those parts of the world. He gave a report. Mr. Baker, who serves about one-third of the landmass in the world, gave a report. And Mr. Joel Meeker did as well concerning the French-speaking work. And we were able to see Daniel and Cindy Harper. They were at the conference, and I think that everyone's aware that was ordained in the past as an elder and has been hired to assist Mr. Meeker. He's also assisting his father-in-law, Mr. Bruce Gore, in Atlanta. So he currently has a couple of jobs. So I'm glad that they're going to keep the young guy busy. But Mr. Meeker gave a report on the French-speaking work. And Mr. Walker gave a report on the Latin American work that he's doing, and certainly also encouraged everyone to recognize the challenges of the brethren throughout the world. This year, the way that the international reports were done is that we were given three things that they wanted us to emphasize or talk about. So we had 7.5 to 8 minutes max. The way they made it sound is they would pull us off the stage if we went over 8 minutes. Mr. Hampton, I noticed he had a stopwatch. He went over 8 minutes. He said he went 8 minutes and 30 seconds. They didn't pull him off, but I wasn't taking any chances. I stayed under 8 minutes. But they asked us to talk about the major challenges in the region where we serve, major events that have taken place in the past year, and then what are the main plans that we have for the future going forward. And for the men like Mr. Tom Clark, who serves in Ghana, and some of the others who serve in Africa, Mr. Meeker, it's very easy to talk about the infrastructure of the country. Mr. Clark showed various roads that had a lot of dirt and rocks and water were not easy to access or to pass through. And it certainly reminded me of many of the roads that we have been on in Kenya. I remember the first time in Kenya driving in a rural area, people were actually driving in the ditch because it was in better condition than the road. So that was on both sides. And it didn't matter which way you were going, wherever you found the best road, that's where you would be as far as trying to find that. So we could talk about the infrastructure. We could talk about the high cost of education. In America, if you haven't had a kid or a child yet, I should say, go through college, you will find out when they get there, college is expensive. But in Africa, with the amount of money they make, the percentage of their income that goes towards education, it's a very high percentage, the way the system that they have set up. So even if you get an education, if you can afford it, there's high unemployment. There are times in Kenya where they've talked to me about all this news they're hearing about high unemployment in America. And we're still under 10%. No matter how you add it up, it seems we're under 10% overall. But they, at times, are at 40 or 50 or 60% unemployment. So when they were asking me about the unemployment in America, and I said, it's under 10%, what's the unemployment here? And they said 42% or whatever it was at the time. I said, well, it's not that bad where we are. But they're under a lot of pressure to work on Saturdays in the church. That's something that they constantly deal with. But all of these things that take place and cause trouble, it's not the biggest challenge for Kenya. The emphasis that I had was the biggest challenge that we have is that we don't have an elder, a Kenyan elder, who can serve the brethren there. I think that would be fantastic if we had someone. I'd certainly appreciate your prayers. I'm not one to just ordain somebody so that we can call someone an elder. I don't think that would be wise or helpful for the brethren. But the short time I've been in the ministry, which for many of the ministers or the pastors who were at the conference, I've been in the ministry about a third or a quarter, or even for some of them, a fifth of the amount of time that they've been in the ministry. But we've served in several congregations, and I've noted any place that there's a strong elder who has good spiritual strength, the congregation is always a lot more stable. So so you know, we greatly appreciate Mr. Jackson and Mrs. Jackson serving the brethren here and as they can in the other congregations as well. But it would make a huge difference if there was someone there that knew the people, understood the culture, understood what sometimes seeps into the church with superstitions and things of that nature from the local tribes and the culture of the area, and understood the language. That would be helpful. So even though Swahili and English are officially the language in Kenya, the language that they speak in the rural areas, whatever their tribal languages are. So in translations, there's always the challenges. Mrs. Waddle can tell you that sometimes when I'm preaching, the translator will go on and on and on when I said three words, and I have to stop them and say, what are you saying? Or I'll say something that seems like takes for 30 seconds, and they'll say three words. And I'll say, well, did you get this across? Or we'll have to talk it through and make sure that we're saying the same thing. But with all that said, that would be a great blessing for the members who are there in Kenya. And the biggest challenge that we have right now is that we don't have an elder, a Kenyan elder, that serves in that area. We do have men that are dedicated members and two deacons, one for each congregation, who work hard. So I don't want to take anything away from what they do to serve, but that would be something that we would certainly appreciate your prayers on. Another major challenge in Kenya are the meeting halls. It's very grateful Mr. Franks was able to come and see. Both of the deacons put up temporary meeting places. I keep wanting to call them temporary outhouses. The truth is they have permanent outhouses. But these are temporary meeting places for the congregation. So each of the deacons had put up a temporary meeting place, and one of them got blown apart by a storm more than once, and so they just left it down, and they rent a very small schoolroom that's close to the area. It has no lighting. It's very dark. The other one, anytime the members are there and it rains, when they have a rain, it's much more of any place where it's hot and humid, and you have more of a downpour, not just a shower. So if there's any rain, they're not able to have services on that Sabbath. So I brought that up at the conference and discussed it with some of the men in the administrations and sent in a request, and it was approved, so I'm very grateful for that. I thought this is the time to ask since they know it's a problem, and so they approved that we can put up a couple of tents. So we're going to have tents manufactured, and they're going to be meeting tents, not just a tent that you might use for camping. So theoretically, they should last for a period of time. And we're not at the point where we want to build permanent structures in Kenya as of yet, but we did get this approved, and I'm very grateful for that. As far as the major event, the one that I expressed for Kenya was Mr. Frank's visit in March. The brethren very much appreciated the fact that he was willing to take time to visit with them. It was very encouraging for them, and the leadership training with some of the leading men and the deacons there was also very encouraging for them, so we were very grateful for that. And then as far as plans for the future, I did talk about developing some sort of meeting facilities, but also the fact that we have the first camp in Kenya coming up in December, and we're going to have four volunteers, if all goes as planned, who will volunteer to go and volunteer to serve the children there. We're combining a preteen and teen camp, and all of those who come to Kenya for camp get to go on a safari for a couple of days afterwards. So I use that as the carrot, so to speak, to get the applicants. They're paying for that themselves, by the way. And then for Nigeria, I actually said that the major event, I started with the major event from the past year that took place, is that we now have a congregation in Nigeria that we're serving through the organization. So I think from my visit there, I probably told you that we have about 25 people who meet each Sabbath in Nigeria. A few families, some of them go back into worldwide and have a lot of experience with the Church of God. All of them were a part of United at one point. You might remember they separated themselves from United and then started looking for an organization to associate with a year or so later. And after much communication, we got to the point where they wanted to be a part of CAGWA, and administration approved them to be a part of CAGWA. So that's a major thing that happened, is that we now have a congregation there. And then as far as going forward, with the help of Cody and Bobby Kitts, we'll visit them up to three times a year, including the feast, and then get to know them, get to understand what it is that they need spiritually and how we're able to serve them. So I thought I'd take a little bit of time to go through that international report that I gave for the brethren in Kenya and Nigeria. So we also had a period of time where men who had served in the ministry for 50 years or more were honored. This is one of those times in the conference where I find it very touching. They will get pictures from their youth and from their days at Ambassador College and from various congregations where they served, and show it up on the screen and talk about when they were ordained and the various congregations in which they served. So there were three men that were honored, an elder from Houston, Mr. Mars, an elder from the London, Kentucky church where my mom currently attends, Mr. Bill Swanson. He was a pastor in Worldwide and then with Global for a period of time, and then with United. He's retired now, but he still serves as an elder in the London, Kentucky congregation. And then Mr. Don Waterhouse has now been ordained and serving in the ministry of Christ for over 50 years. So this year, those were the old folks, who were honored for their dedication and their service and their work. We also had an update from Foundation Outreach International, so from FOI. Somebody told me that my wife had gave a good presentation, and I had to let them know that was my sister-in-law. So my brother's wife, Rhonda Waddle, is on the board for Foundation Outreach International, and she was there along with Chad Dimmer's brother, Cliff, who gave a presentation. And so Mrs. Waddell, or as she likes to pronounce it, Mrs. Waddell, gave a presentation and went through the various things that Foundation Outreach is working on. So you might remember that it's a separate arm of the church, and they are able to accept corporate donations, and they're able to have various projects, such as the project that the young adults did here with the Hilltop Association. I forget the formal name of it, but they put together the food bags for Ronald McDonald's house and delivered them there. So Hilltop actually funded that in order to buy the food and the supplies that were necessary. So that was a service project that they did. So there's been a variety of those service projects around the country, and they're trying to get those service projects around the world. So if anybody is interested in that, I would encourage you to look into it. It's up to $500 that could be used for any sort of service project in the community, or even if there's someone in the church that needs some sort of service project, we can serve that as well and do that. So please keep that in mind, and also the various camps and service opportunities. We have one of our guests here, Miss Ashley Hall, who is preparing to go to Africa. And I was talking to a minister who's getting ready to go to Africa for his first time, and I said, you'll either love it and want to keep going back, as I do, or you'll think that was interesting, and I'm glad I'm back in America and not go back. So she's going to go and see what she thinks, and I'm sure that it'll be a wonderful opportunity. She'll be teaching English. If I remember correctly, you will be in Zambia and Malawi. And Vivian did the same thing last summer in Zimbabwe. So we also have a project that you might be aware of in Jordan. We still have people that are teaching in Jordan, and that's a nine to 12 month project that's taking place. I think the English classes are 2 weeks or 3 weeks long, and then the camps in Ghana and Kenya and other places as well. There's also a new program that's called Embark. So when this becomes available, I'd like for those who are interested to take a look at this and understand what the program is. The idea behind this is to provide mentors for the young people in the church. So people in various experiences in corporations will be the people who will mentor the young people and help them to understand their talents, their strengths, their likes and dislikes, and go through some interviewing processes and various things of that nature and help them as far as becoming a part of the workforce and recognizing certain keys towards a successful career. So it sounds like a wonderful program. I'm very eager to see this as it gets up and running. There were some things that Mr. Dimmer's, Cliff Dimmer's, talked about that I thought I'd like to participate in myself, and not as a mentor, but a mentee. So it sounds like it'll be a wonderful opportunity as that comes up. We had an update from Dr. Ralph Levy concerning Foundation Institute. Things are going extremely well with Foundation Institute. They just said, as Uncle Sam used to say, we want you. So they need more men. They're asking if there's any young men who have thought about applying for Foundation Institute to consider doing so. That would be a wonderful opportunity to take a year. It is a year of your life and a year of time, but it's a wonderful opportunity to go in depth as far as the study of God's Word. We heard from Mr. Meeker concerning building on a strong foundation. A lot of that had to do with the rules and regulations of the Ministerial Board of Directors and the job that they're doing. And Mr. Dave Johnson, there was a lot of humor that took place throughout the conference, but Mr. Johnson showed this little clip of a cat doing a happy dance, and he said if his job goes well with the voting, we have very little voting, which we appreciate in Kagwa, but we do every so often vote for Ministerial Board of Directors. When we started, we had three who had a three-year service and then four who had eight-year service. And then after this first round, everyone, once that comes up for votes, will be 8 years for serving on the ministerial board of directors. That was covered in detail as far as that process and how it's going to take place. And then Mr. Dave Myers did a presentation on leadership for the future. And this is something that I'm very excited about. At the Feast of Tabernacles, if all goes as planned, each family with children or anticipating at some point in the future having children will be given don't worry, Jonathan, you got lots of time. But they will be given a, I don't know what you call it, a voucher, I guess, that you can turn in and receive a binder. And the binder is going to be called Encourage, Equipped, and Inspire. So Encourage, Equipped, and Inspire. It's a parent's resource manual. You'll see this. A manual, the very first thing when you open it up will be a prologue, which is a call to action for the mothers and the fathers. And there is an emphasis that we, as much as possible, would like both to be involved in this. And it's just going to be a good guideline as far as teaching our children. So you have heard me emphasize, and if you don't remember, maybe you'll remember my analogy, the emphasis that I've tried to put on teaching our children is that it has to happen in the homes. There is a responsibility that the church has to help teach children, but it has to happen in the homes. If the children are not being taught in the homes, if they're not seeing the example in their homes, that is not giving them the foundation that they need to build upon as far as their personal relationship with our God and our Savior. So this is a manual. It can be used in Sabbath school as far as taking some of the ideas behind it. But the idea, the main idea with this manual is to teach the children in the homes, and it gives you a place to start. So, for example, within the manual will be all the, from what I understand, the 20 fundamental beliefs, and it'll just give you an outline that you can take. And I'm glad that Kasha's home. Hopefully she'll come home in the future, and you can sit down with her, and I'm sure you did it before. It's too late now. I know the feeling, but the idea is to go through these Ten Commandments, to go through the fundamental beliefs, and to give our children a good foundation then that as they hear these things taught, they have a framework in which to put it all together as far as what God is doing with us and through us as a body, as a church, and as, certainly as individuals as well. So we're looking forward to that coming out and very excited about that. And like I said, if all goes as planned, that'll be coming up at the Feast of Tabernacles. Then Mr. Myers also emphasized that the ministry is not getting any younger. And so he pulled no punches in the fact that the ministry is getting older. And as a ministry and as a church, it is our responsibility to make sure that all of you are trained in living God's way of life, and that we're all trained in sharing God's way of life, and that we have a huge responsibility to work with our young people from all ages and making sure that they recognize, all of our young people, that this is their church and that we need them to serve, to be a part of the work, to be a part of the body. And our responsibility is to help train them and put them in a position where they can do that in such a way certainly that God will continue to bless His church and bless His work and bless His people. As you know, the Bible tells us to pass God's way of life on to our children and our children's children for all generations. And that's certainly the way God intends it to be. Mr. Myers showed a slide that showed, he said, if your leadership in your congregation looks like this, and he had this slide come up, and they were happy people. And it was no one, it was just a generic picture, but they were all in their 70s or older and smiling and serving and things. And he said, if your leadership team in your congregation looks like this, then he said, this is what they're going to look like in the near future. And he went to the next slide and it was empty. So like I said, he was not pulling punctions. And so he said, we have to get the leadership teams to look like this. And he showed a picture of younger people, about my age, maybe a little younger. So again, a call to action for the ministry to make sure that we are striving with God's inspiration and God's direction to please God and to do His will and to glorify Him and to make sure that the body is strong. So going back to the Painted House, where Mr. Franks mentioned that book by John Grissom, The Painted House, and that book was set in the part of Arkansas, again, in which he lived and was familiar with as far as helping his family on their farm in Arkansas. He was talking about at that time that his grandparents had what they referred to the family called the Big House. So they owned the property in which other family members lived around, and they had a little bit larger house. But the reason that this was the big house or the best house is that it had a strong foundation. This was a house that was built to last. And I know some of what he was referring to. I didn't grow up on a farm, but my grandparents had a farm, and we'd go visit them and work for them in the summer times. And there was a big house of someone who owned the land, and then those who worked the land tend to have the smaller houses. Well, he talked about this, the tenant houses, where people would come sometimes just to live, to help, either to plant the crops or to harvest the crops, and how this was a symbol of how the people lived. And he talked about how he went back to show his family in the 80s. He wanted to show his children and his wife where he grew up and the farm and the various houses. And he said when he got there, it was difficult to recognize because all the tenant homes were gone. None of them were built to last and none of them remained. He said the big house with the strong foundation was still there. And it reminded me somewhat of what they talk about occasionally in Kenya. One of the members there, his wife, has often talked about the fact that she wanted a stone house with a foundation. And at first, it took me a while to understand that. But after traveling there a number of times, especially in the rural areas, they will put up a hut, a mud hut with a thatch roof. And over a number of years, it just wears out. And they either tear it down and start over, or they just move 30 feet away or something and build another hut, and here's a hut that's deteriorating and falling apart. So they don't have that stability. So a stone house represented not just a certain amount of wealth in that area, but it represented stability, that they had a house that wouldn't deteriorate or just fall apart over time or due to the weather. So that was he was talking about, Mr. Franks was talking about how these homes, the ones with the good foundation were still there, but the tenant homes were gone. And the book, The Painted House, captured that way of life, but he emphasized that because they didn't have a good foundation and those tenant homes were gone, if archaeologists came through to study the area, they wouldn't know anything about those people that would come in, the migrant workers and various ones that would work to earn a living, work on the farms, because there's no houses that are there. So a way of life, a very culture, had vanished or disappeared over just a few generations. And that was a way of life through a lot of our country at that time. So those homes are gone, and that way of life is lost. The culture is lost. So the theme of the conference, build upon this rock. Build upon this foundation, was emphasized for all of us. And we recognize that God must do the calling and God must do the building, but He has called us to be a part of the work that He is doing. And we must make sure that we are building upon the rock, building on the true foundation. So we understand that unless the Lord shall build the house, the weary builders toil in vain. But God has called us to be a part of His work and to serve with His Son, Jesus Christ, the people that He calls.